Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, November 13th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 15 minutes or so. As we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we push through the middle of the week here on the program. Two guests on today's show. The first, professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. We'll chat a little bit of general NBA stuff, get into some college football for tonight and over the weekend, then also take a look at this week in the NFL. Second half of today's show, professional handicapper Kyle Hunter will join me from huntersportspicks.com. Couldn't do the show on Monday, so we get Kyle here on Wednesday. In fact, actually recorded that segment Tuesday afternoon with him, so that'll be coming up here later on in today's show. And for those that were asking about it, I did separate the college basketball and college football segments within the editing process. So those are two separate segments within the one Kyle Hunter segment for those people that just listen to the individual segments on Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to Bang the Book Radio. I will be separating that Kyle Hunter segment for you for your convenience. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Plenty of things going on already. Daily NHL picks from Parker Michaels. Situational tips across four different sports betting markets from me. College football power ratings. NFL power ratings will be coming here tomorrow or tonight or tomorrow morning from Danny Vorgs. UFC, NASCAR, soccer, golf, tennis, all that good stuff over at bangthebook.com. Make sure you check it out. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Couple guests on the program here today. We start with professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
It's going very well, and I do apologize for missing last week, but hopefully we can bring some winners to the listeners today and make up for it.
Sure hope so, and I appreciate that you do this every week. It's very rare that we get any cancellations from our guests, and usually when we do, it's a very, very good reason for it. So, hey, just appreciate you coming on every week here and joining me, and we got a lot of things to talk about here for this week, and a market that we don't typically talk about here on the show. We will after college football and the NFL are done, is the NBA. And I know that's something that you do a lot here at this time of the year. So any, you know, impressions here now that we're about a month into the season?
Yeah, a lot of impressions. I do something a little bit different. I started it this year is, you know, people are always talking ATS records, win losses, based on the final score of the game. But there's a lot of what I consider coin flip situations at the end of these NBA games. If you're an NBA bettor, you know as well as anybody else how it works out. You're covering the entire game. Then all of a sudden the team hits a three at the buzzer, and it's the first time they've covered the entire game. And people go look back and they'll count that team as the ATS winner. And as the season goes on, you forget how that game played out. And you look and you'll say, hey, this team is very good on the road in this situation. And, you know, they're 6-3 or whatever. Well, if you only count it based on the final score, that will be what you come up with. But I have charted this year the average lead in the game. For example, last night, let me take my NBA schedule. Last night there were two games in which the team that won the game was behind most of the game. One of them was the Utah Jazz. They had that big fourth quarter run. They win 119-114. They did not cover the spread, but they did get the victory. But if you look at that game overall, the Brooklyn Nets led by 3.9 points on average in that entire game. So even though Utah got the victory, I make a note of that, and I feel that Brooklyn may have an edge in that regard. Same thing with Cleveland and Philadelphia. Philadelphia wins 98-97. But if you watch that game, Cleveland was the better team. Cleveland had a 1.9 average lead in that game all game long. And it's something I do for live betting also. Coming into the fourth quarter, Cleveland was with them the entire game. and Cleveland was getting plus six entering the fourth quarter in live betting. I bet Cleveland. They were up by five late in that game. Tristan Thompson had a brain fart for about 2 minutes and couldn't do anything right. In fact, he did everything wrong, which cost the Cavaliers the game. But he did play excellent up to that point. But, you know, people are going to look at that and say, well, here's Cleveland again, another loss. They've got a bad record. But if you watch the Cavaliers, especially after they played Boston. Now, when they played Boston, Boston has great – they probably got the best ball movement in the league now that Golden State is no longer Golden State. And you watch Boston, and they're not sticky anywhere, meaning that if some guy's got the ball, he either shoots it or he passes it. And after the game, the new Cleveland Cavalier coach came over from Michigan. He's brand new coach to the NBA. He said, that is the kind of ball we're going to play the rest of the season. He says, now that we have seen the way it works with Boston, you're going to see us playing it a little bit better. Now that the guys got it in their head and they've had to defend it. Well, if you followed the Cleveland Cavaliers since that time, Cleveland is playing a totally different type of basketball. It's all clicked in their heads because they were able to see it against them. They played the Knicks a couple nights ago. They were blowing out the Knicks at the half. Second half line comes out. It's got the Knicks favored by six. And you just watched every play of that game, and the Cavaliers were defending the rim. They were excited about the game. This is a team that doesn't win very often, as we both know, coming from Cleveland. They were excited in that game, and so I bet Cleveland in the second half plus the six. Cleveland actually outscores the Knicks in the second half. Being able to watch these games and being able to get the stats and see more than what the final score is a huge benefit in the NBA.
Now, obviously, there are a lot of good in-game situations, which is what you're talking about in terms of, you know, some quarter betting, some live betting, some half betting. In terms of something like last night with a Brooklyn and Utah, I mean, do you look to play against Utah from a full game standpoint in the next game because it was a pretty misleading final? Maybe look to play on Brooklyn thinking that there's some extra value. Is that just a one-game thing, or is that kind of a longer-term look for you,
though? Well, in this case, it's a one-game thing. But when you chart every team in the league, you could see some generalizations. For one, the Denver Nuggets are probably the most overrated team in the NBA, if it's not the Philadelphia 76ers. Denver is a team who continues to be talked about, and the Lions consider them to be an elite team in the league. And maybe they will be. They have the talent to do that. But as we know, when you're playing in baseball, 162 games, NBA, 82 games, it's a long season. You're going to have your ebbs and flows. And the Lions really are slow to react in that regard. So, you know, you saw Denver last night. They lose that game outright to Atlanta. Atlanta, actually, their average lead in that game was 2 points. And then Atlanta wins that game 125-121. So if I'm checking the Denver Nuggets on the season, you know, I'm looking at their record, and sure, they've only lost three games all season. But if you take a look at the average line in the game that a team had to lead, they should be 5-5. And when you take a look at that numbers after 10 games, they've only been ahead in those games on average by 0.15 points per game. So it's been basically a coin flip. And you take a look at the lines, the Denver Nuggets have been favored in every single game this season. It tells me the linesmaker hasn't caught up with Denver, and Denver's a team I'm looking to play against. And if you look at their numbers, they've only covered three times all season. So that's something that's very important. And as opposed to maybe the Utah one-game situation, Denver's a team that I'm looking to fade as the season goes on until they do start playing up to their competition. And you have teams out there right now like Phoenix, Toronto, the Boston Celtics that are playing over their heads right now, and I'm taking advantage of it. And, you know, Phoenix blew that game last night against the Lakers, but for the entire game, they were right there the entire game. And that game overall was so tight, there was nobody that had an advantage overall. It was basically 0-0 the entire game. It was such a tight game overall.
You know, and it's funny too, because I sort of look at the NBA. I mean, I'm not a big basketball fan in general. I do like college more than the NBA, but I kind of dismiss the NBA as a sport that I feel, or as a league that I feel like is very difficult to bet on, because I feel like you've got a lot of questionable motivation night in and night out, a lot of scheduling spots. Sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't. Obviously, you've got players that sit out, but it sounds like it's actually the opposite, where the NBA may be one of the best markets to bet.
It could be if you go beyond the traditional box scores. I'll be honest with you. I had my only NBA play yesterday was the Oklahoma City Thunder, and they got crushed by 26. So I'm not going to win them all. We're 11-7 on the season, off to a nice start. But that was a terrible pick. Oklahoma City just didn't show up. And Indiana's been a team playing a lot better ball as of late. But if you take a look at the Indiana schedule, Oklahoma City's probably the best team they played this year. They had a very easy schedule. That's something I'll be able to go against Indiana with in the future. And so even though I lost the game, it was nice I lost in blowout fashion, because now everybody thinks that Indiana is as good as what they were hyped coming into the season. You know, they still don't have their best player back. So I think there'll be some value on betting against Indiana because of that. But yeah, it's different now than it's been in the past. And, you know, when I started close to 40 years ago, I started in the NBA, and that's how I made my living. And the NBA has been so tough the last few years. The reason being is you don't know who's going to play. And that's the thing. Like Philadelphia, I'm sure Embiid's not playing tonight. Third game is four nights, second of a back-to-back, which is why Orlando's taking a little bit of money on, you know, so far this morning. But that's one of the reasons that the NBA is soured on a lot of people, including myself, is because you don't know who's going to play. But you, as long as you're on Twitter and you follow the beat writers, you're able to get a little bit of an advantage there. But, you know, a lot of these guys, the guys backing them up, not an Embiid situation or an elite player situation, but a lot of these guys, the guys sitting at the bench to get a chance to play, they're an extremely good player. And for that one game, they could come out and play very well. So it's not an injury situation. It's a situation where they can come in and show what they've got for one game. And they do. And even with the injuries, we've known that for years. If a team has an injury player, they come up the first game and perform very well. And then after that, you fade them. But yeah, the NBA's, anytime you're playing in a league where you've got, for example, Orlando's been off 2 days in a row, Philadelphia's playing a third game in four nights, being able to keep track of things like that is definitely a help. And you know, I get the killersports.com NBA schedule book, and he goes through every single game. Ed Meyer goes through every single game, and he'll tell you, he'll say who's coming up next, who they just played, what the scheduling situation is for both teams. And it definitely is something that you could track as the season goes on. And certain teams aren't very good in the second of back-to-back, or they may be resting a certain person in that situation. So it's a lot more to look at than just final scores and lines.
Well, and of course, too, I mean, the record that's posted over at wagertalk.com for you, only full game sides and totals, because you do a lot of in-game wagering, second half stuff, as we mentioned already. Right. That stuff, you know, it's hard to track because not everybody has access to it or can get to it in time. Would you say that the NBA is the best sport to live bet, in your opinion?
I think it is, because you're getting, obviously, you get a lot more scoring with totals. Now in the today everything's in the 200s and up to the 233.5. So you're getting a lot more scoring in this game. So you're going to have chances for teams to get on more runs. And if there's certain sites out there, and I'm not going to give away any trade secrets, but there's certain sites out there that will give you a breakdown of when these five players were on the court, how they did. So when you see a team that normally would break a certain player, like when LeBron came to Cleveland, was in Cleveland, he would break usually the last 2 minutes of the first quarter. So you go back and chart how Cleveland did with LeBron in the game and how they did without LeBron in the game. And you were able to take advantage of that, that knowing his break is coming up. And so you bet against Cleveland in that situation. And then when you know when he comes back, then you could bet on Cleveland. So I don't know if that's all in the algorithm, but it's something that I use. And for live betting, it definitely helps. And like last night, you know, if you take a look at the Knicks are by far, well, Golden State's really bad too, but the Knicks are by far the worst team in the NBA. And they got off to a nice start against Chicago. And Chicago is one of these teams, by my charting, that they're a lot better than what their record shows. And so the Knicks got off to like a 4-point lead early, very early in the game. The line on the game was 6.5, and I was able to lay 4.5 with the Bulls based on one little hot streak that the New York Knicks had. And, of course, the Bulls win that game by 20. And that's a one-game sample. Anything can happen. But that's the kind of advantages you can get by playing the NBA, getting 2 points better than what the line was only, you know, maybe 4 minutes into the game.
Well, something for listeners to definitely keep an eye on here tonight with seven games in the NBA. And we transition over to the college football side where we've got two games that, quite frankly, I don't really know if anybody wants to watch the MAC at this point in time. Last night I had under 50 and I had under 50 early in the week on Eastern Michigan and Akron. And once I saw the closing line value I had, I knew it had no shot of coming through because that's just how it's been so far this year. 35-point second half in Akron, miserable conditions, no crowd whatsoever. That game goes over. Massive second half of Western Michigan and Ohio. That one went over the total as well. So for people that just jumped on the over for action, congratulations, you won both of those. But tonight, I mean, look, we've got two probably ugly games again. Bowling Green, Miami of Ohio. Miami of Ohio, a 17-point home favorite in this one over Bowling Green. And then Northern Illinois and Toledo. Shit, I'm old enough to remember when this was a massive Maction game, 2010, 2011. Now Toledo's a 2.5-point favorite, total 54. No idea what to do with either one of those teams. You got any interest tonight in either one of these games, Brian?
No, I don't. I did have Ohio last night. I took a plus the one, line bounced up and down, changing favorites all day long. But I had Ohio lose that game in overtime. These two, I made Miami about 17 here. It's tough to lay 17 points when you don't score much. The total in this game is only 49. Bowling Green, you know, they give up a lot of points, but they are able to score a little bit. Miami's just the opposite team. They don't give up many points, but they don't score many. So it's kind of funny. It's kind of like the Northwestern game this week where you lay at 41 points in a game when a team has a trouble scoring. And that is probably, to me, the most interesting game for the weekend. But, yeah, in these two games, I think the line is where it should be. My line's a little bit higher on Toledo. But Northern Illinois has played the tougher schedule, and I don't really want to lay points with Toledo. I don't trust them. So I'm going to be passing on both these games this evening.
Yeah, I won't have any interest. I mean, I got out in front of that total in the Akron game. That's the only reason I played it was because I knew it was going to go down. Weather forecast was terrible. Akron hadn't scored a touchdown in like 6 weeks or whatever it was. Of course, they get an 87-yard touchdown pass in that game because, you know, God forbid that one stay under. But the one thing I will say about these games here tonight, you've got a Northern Illinois team that's sitting there at 3-6 right now. First-year head coach Thomas Hammack. They've got to run the table against Toledo, Eastern, and Western. Not going to be easy for them to get to bowl eligibility here. If they lose tonight, I worry about this team quite a bit the next 2 weeks because keep in mind, this is a team not that far removed from playing, you know, a New Year's Six BCS type of appearance, a team that, you know, is used to having high expectations that they are clearly not going to meet this season.
Yeah, that's true. And I believe Ralph Michaels has talked about that. And yeah, Northern Illinois is one of those constants in this conference where, you know, they're going to be one of the top three teams in this league. They're going to go bowling. They finished the season with Eastern Michigan and Western Michigan. Yeah, it's also Northern's fourth road game in the last 5 weeks. And actually, when you look at their schedule, the previous 4 weeks before that, they were on the road for three of those 4 weeks. So they've had a brutal schedule when you take a look at it. And obviously, when you're in the MAC, you're not traveling very far. But that, they're one of the more outliers in the MAC when you take a look at geographically. Most of the teams in Michigan and then in, you know, general Ohio area. So, you know, the travel has been a little bit tougher for them. But you're right. You know, you get these teams that are normally playing for something at the end of the year, and they may not be playing for something this year. That's a concern as you go into the final weeks of the season. And, you know, Toledo's going to go bowling again. Toledo's got a decent record, but they're not the team that they have been in the past. And, you take a look, even in wins lately, they beat Kent State by 2 last week. They beat Eastern Michigan by 3 the week before. Western, they win by 7. BYU by 7. They're winning a lot of these coin flip games, but they're not a good football team this year. And normally Toledo at home, they're a team that you're looking to back, but I can't trust them.
Yeah, here in 5 MAC games this season, Toledo outscored by 39 points, which is not something at all that we've seen from Toledo here of late. By the way, Northern Illinois, this is their 7th road game of the season out of 10 games. So that just speaks to the schedule that you talked about. Maybe something that we should have paid attention to from a season win total standpoint. Won't be long until those are posted again. Schedule analysis, very important. And if you've got that imbalanced home and road, split of games, something you definitely want to keep a close eye on here for next season in the win total market. We'll go off script real quickly here just because I just want to get your thoughts on this line move for Thursday night between Buffalo and Kent State, up from 4.5 to as high as 6.5 now with Buffalo laying a road price. Is that a line move that you agree with?
Let me take a look here and see what I have it. 3-11, 3-12. I have Buffalo as probably a 3-point favorite here. And as you mentioned, it's gone from 3.5 up to 6. A lot of love for Buffalo here, but my number's not showing it. I went through it, and basically Buffalo's played a much tougher schedule than Kent State. We're to the point of the season now where we can break teams down by their schedule, and just because your power rating has a certain number, you have to definitely go back and see who they've played. And the schedule strength for Buffalo, I think people have realized that it's much stronger than Kent State, and I think that's why it's going up, but it's not enough to make me get involved in this contest.
I think it's one of those things, too, where you get these MAC games on weeknights, and people are dying to play them. They're dying for a team to actually trust in this conference, and the only team you can trust is Akron in terms of going against them because they've been so bad against the spread this year. I think that's part of the sentiment here for Buffalo, too, is that, as you mentioned, they played a pretty good schedule. They were leading Penn State at halftime. They played very well in some of their other games. I think people are just dying for something to trust in this conference, and maybe Buffalo right now is that team.
There's so many times when when a Buffalo or Kent State play, the vast majority of people have not seen a Buffalo or Kent State game all season long. We are getting into the point of the season now where the MAC is playing on these weekdays games. It's not the first week. It'll be the second or third week. And if a team comes out and plays very well in one game, you know where that money's coming the second game, because a lot of your guys that are normally playing your televised games, they don't know anything about these teams, but they saw, hey, last week this team looked really good and this other team looked really bad. And now they're playing each other. You know where that line's going to go. The public's going to come in on that. But you just saw 1/10 of their season or whatever. One game out of 10 games that they have played, 9-10 games. So you really don't have the whole picture unless you follow these teams. And it's just like you said, there's people out there that want the action. And to be honest with you, I would rather, and I have, I've passed on a lot of these midweek games with the MAC this year. I just haven't seen the value, and I'd rather play college basketball or the NBA, where a lot of people don't know as much about it at this point. I mean, I've gotten arguments with people when at this point of the season, they would rather watch a college football game or an NFL game over a college basketball game or an NBA game. And I said, well, you've already seen these teams play 9 times already. They only have 3 games left in the season. There's only limited time for you to take advantage of that going through the rest of the year, as opposed to maybe the NBA, when they play 10 games, and you still have 70 more games to take a look at. Same with college. These guys only play 2 or 3 games. They got another 40 games or whatever, 35 games to play the rest of the year. And you could definitely learn something from that. So, even though everybody loves to bet football, and I don't blame them. I mean, football is America's sport. The lines are tighter at this time of year. And my plays have been, the last 3 weeks I've had 1 NFL play each of the last 3 weeks. The lines are just so much tighter that I'm just looking to make profit for my clients, regardless of what sport it's in. And you're going to make it more money in the first month of any sport, I think, than you're going to make anywhere else, because you've got the same advantage the linesmaker has. And they don't know anything about it. You don't know anything about it. You put in the work, and especially in college basketball, there's so many teams out there. If you follow one team and one conference, you should have a huge head up over everybody else early on in the season.
All right, so we go to Saturday here, and we'll pay homage and give a little bit of a hat tip to our mutual friend, Wes Reynolds. I know you were chatting with him last night. We'll get him back on the show again next Wednesday, but I just want to make sure we got Kyle Hunter, a segment with Kyle Hunter on the show here this week. So wanted to get that here on today's program. We'll get Wes back on the show next week. But in honor of him, let's talk about his Indiana Hoosiers here. Game 325-326 on Saturday. I think this game is really interesting. Penn State, maybe a little bit of a bubble burst angle for them. They lose their undefeated season at Minnesota last week. Yet they're laying 14.5 here this week to Indiana, a Hoosiers team in the top 25 in college football for the first time in 25 years.
Yeah. A lot of people will be looking to play against either one of these teams. Indiana, as you said, finally getting some recognition. Penn State with possible bubble burst, but I don't know if Penn State entered this season thinking they were going to play for anything more than a chance to get in a good bowl game. I mean, Ohio State's been better than anybody thought they were going to be coming into the season, although the talent has always been there. But, you know, you take a look at the strength of schedule. Penn State's 23rd, Indiana's 96th, so there's a huge strength of schedule edge for Penn State here. You take a look at the game scores so far. I'm looking at Indiana's number against Penn State's number, and Penn State's probably maybe about 10 points better on a neutral, and you're catching them at home here, probably give them 3.5, so it's 13.5 right there, and we're talking about the line being 14.5. So when you add in the strength of schedule for Penn State against Indiana, my numbers say Penn State's the side. We're looking at 14.5 here. I'd love to see a 14 again, an open 14 to play Penn State. Probably still play Penn State because a lot of people will take a look at that and see that, you know, maybe they did have that bubble burst, but I don't believe it. I would look to fade Indiana. I mean, Ralph Michaels has been following this all year. When a team makes the top 25, they've just been a fade the following week. I think that's what we're going to see out of Indiana here. The strength of schedule is huge, and you usually don't see that, a 32 and a 96 in the same conference this far into the season. Indiana's taken advantage of weak opponents, but to give them credit, in the past, a lot of times they've just come up short against weak opponents, and they've had many weeks that they've basically underperformed. This year, Indiana's done what they've had to do against these weak opponents. They played good ball. They're deserving of being a top, you know, 25-30 team. But I think there's some value here on Penn State. I'm looking to play Penn State here. It's a slightly better number.
Well, and of course, too, you know, you factor in Penn State plays Ohio State next week. Now, they're going to be, I think I have Penn State a 20-point dog in that game, 19 or 20-point dog on the road in Columbus. So, people are going to play up this look-ahead factor. They're going to play up this sandwich spot factor where maybe people get too cute with this handicap. Maybe Penn State is just far and away the better team, and we'll see how this one plays out, but I think it's one of the most interesting handicaps of the Week 12 college football slate. We'll spend a couple minutes real quickly here on the NFL. We ran a little bit longer than I thought on the NBA, but that's not a problem because, as you said, more opportunities in the NBA. We don't talk about it as much here on the show, but I wanted to pick your brain about a couple of NFL games here. And in fact, I'm going to go off script again just because we're both Cleveland guys. So I want to get your take on Thursday Night Football here. Game 309-310, Pittsburgh and Cleveland. Browns, 2.5-point favorite. A lot of extra juice out there on the 2.5s for this short week. I know you've been following the Browns. I know you've been paying attention. Obviously, by proxy, we wind up following the Steelers too. What do you think about this one here on Thursday night?
Well, from a handicapping standpoint, I tend to lean with Cleveland anything less than 3, based on the talent of the teams and the situational situation here with Cleveland playing at home. But knowing the history of these two teams and knowing I'm not a big believer in the Pittsburgh Steelers coaching staff. I think they win based on their players, not on the coaching staff. I'm not a fan of the coaching staff at all. But the Cleveland coaching staff continues to find ways to screw this team up. And you have two teams, you know, just from a blind standpoint, Pittsburgh this year has a winning record now. They have lost their Hall of Fame quarterback early in the season, but they find ways to win. Cleveland Browns, the more talented team by far in this game, I believe, continue to find ways to lose. And if it wasn't for that last drive, they lose last week again to Buffalo in a game where I happen to like Buffalo, but most people I talked to were all over Cleveland. It's a game that if it comes down to the fourth quarter, I'm looking to bet live on Pittsburgh because I know that the team as a whole knows how to win. I don't think Cleveland knows how to win. I don't want to lay points with Cleveland, although I think at this point, as long as it's less than three, I lean that way. But we'll see how this goes in live betting, and I'll be looking to take a chance on Pittsburgh when it gets down to the fourth quarter in a tight game.
We talked about Buffalo and Miami on Tuesday's show with Brian Blessing. I want to talk about Arizona and San Francisco with you here, game 467-468. These two games are very interesting to me because you're starting to get into that second division matchup. So you've got an adjusted line from the first game. For example, Buffalo in the first game against Miami, a 17-point home favorite. Now this week, a 6-point road favorite against the Miami team that's been playing much better here of late. Arizona and San Francisco is interesting because a few weeks ago on Halloween night, San Francisco was a 10-point road favorite traveling on a short week to take on Arizona. This week, they're an 11.5-point home favorite against the Cardinals. So we've obviously seen some adjustments with these two teams over the last couple of weeks here. San Francisco, potential bubble burst game for them, losing last week to Seattle. What do you think about this one here in the NFC West, Brian?
Yeah, you talked about the Buffalo-Miami, and I could definitely see that as Miami's playing a lot better ball than they did earlier in the season, and Buffalo is probably not as good as what their record showed. So that one made a lot of sense. This one I'm not sure does. It opened 13.5 is what I have. I bet down to 11.5 cheap numbers, which means it's going to 11. You know, San Francisco, obviously, a little bit shorter time frame here, but just because a lot of people saw that game on national TV and they didn't look as good in that game, they were right there in that game. That game could have gone either way. You know, the overtime obviously is something you want to take a look at here. And, you know, shorter game on or shorter week with an overtime, I could definitely see that. But what has Arizona done to make you want to change your mind against Arizona? This, you know, I doubt it gets down to 10. If it's 10, it's a buy for me on San Francisco. It may be a buy at 11. That's the side I'm looking at right now. But I haven't had too many plays in the NFL. Like I said, lines have been really tight to me. So I don't know if I'll get there, but it seems to me the value here is on San Francisco.
You've got a fourth road game in 5 weeks scenario here for Arizona coming back off the Tampa Bay game. Yeah, they've covered five of their last six, but Cincinnati, who's a dumpster fire, Atlanta, same thing up until last week when they beat New Orleans. The Giants are a mess. The only non-cover in there is Arizona getting blown out by New Orleans, which isn't really surprising. They cover that game against San Francisco on the short week. San Francisco off the Carolina blowout loss. Then cover last week against Tampa Bay, which Tampa Bay is not good enough to put margin on anybody because Jameis Winston can't stop turning the football over. So this may be a case of some recency bias here where San Francisco's lost three of their last four against the spread. Arizona's won five of their last six. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it in the context of the contests, but I agree with you. I think San Francisco is probably the way to look here, especially if this line does keep coming down.
If I'm correct, and I don't remember, but didn't San Francisco have a sizable lead in that game and it was sort of like the backdoor type of cover?
Let me check. I think that does make sense. So it sounds like that's pretty familiar to me.
So that's one of those. It's similar to what I talked about in the NBA, where you take a look at the entire game and how the game is played out. You know, so just because a team got the cover at the end of the game does not mean that was the team that deserved the cover after the game was played. So, yeah, San Francisco are nothing for me. Hopefully this line will continue to go down.
Yeah, you look at that game. San Francisco was up 21-7 at half. They're up 28-14. Arizona covered on an 88-yard touchdown pass to Andy Isabella. It was a 35-second drive. And then San Francisco salted the game away with their last possession. So, yeah, you could make a case that San Francisco probably should have covered the 10 in that game, winning by 11 because Arizona got the two-point conversion. So, yeah, again, a little bit of recency bias creeping into this one. I guess we'll see how this one plays out, also how the line movement sets up for the rest of the week. Professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. What's going on over there right now, man?
Wednesday is video day, and we're going in today, and we brought in one of our NBA experts, another quality NBA handicapper from out of town that's going to come in and do some videos. So we're pretty excited about that. And, yeah, you talked about one of the other games that we talked about, the sandwich situation. And, you know, Marco D'Angelo has his sandwich game of the week on there. And he's done very well in that, but I'm sure that may be one of the plays he uses for the sandwich game of the week. But yeah, a lot of good information on there. We've got, you know, obviously we own the gold sheet now, so Bruce Marshall is in there each and every week. And then Bruce is just, he's worked for the gold sheet forever. And the guy's got a memory that just amazes me. And he's got great information, great stories. And I really enjoy listening to him talk, and gives us good information. So we got a lot of quality guys on there, and half of the guys are on your show. I mean, Rob Michaels is on the show here too. So a lot of good quality information, all videos, and of course, a couple of beautiful girls in Minty Betts and Kelly in Vegas. So it's nice for the eye candy, and they're just as beautiful in person and as they are in videos. And you know that as well, because you did come in and do videos with us once, and we're looking forward to getting you back.
Yeah, looking forward to that here sometime in the spring once I finish up my season win total betting guide for Major League Baseball. And who knows, maybe it'll coincide with the Indians being out there for some spring training action against the A's. But Brian Leonard, professional handicapper, wagertalk.com, at BLeonardSports on Twitter. Appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great. Everybody have a good day, and let's get some winners.
There you go. There's Brian Leonard again, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com, at BLeonardSports on Twitter. We got one more guest, one more segment here for this Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. We're going to change things up here a little bit. Bring on professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
Going all right, man. Little bit of a difficult week here with a lot of things going on and a little bit under the weather here myself. But, you know, I'm glad that we were able to do a segment here this week still.
Yeah, and obviously for those that listen to us all the time, unable to do the segment on Monday with Kyle, told you we'd get him on the show here later in the week. We're doing that here on Wednesday, so it's going to have all of us screwed up for the rest of the week, not knowing what day it is. But we want to make sure we got something on the show here for you. And, in fact, with Kyle having a little bit of a cough, hopefully you'll make it through this segment. But we're probably going to shorten things up a little bit. Hopefully next Monday we'll be able to go a little bit longer talking college football and college basketball. But we'll start on the college basketball side here first, mostly because I have all those tabs open already. Interesting start to the season, to say the least, now that we're a little over a week into the year.
Yeah, you know, I think the most interesting thing was, you know, how are the new rules going to affect the game? So far, it's been great for underbettors. 163 unders and 118 overs. 58.01% unders. This has slowed down a little bit here the last few days. I believe it started something like 66-30 to the under. So, you know, obviously the odds makers are going to adjust and the betting market's going to adjust. So that's something to keep in mind right now, is that if you like the under, you probably want to play it soon. If you like the over, in a lot of cases, you probably want to wait and play that later, because that's really getting a lot of run right now. People are talking about the under quite a bit based on the new rules. The other thing that kind of stands out to me when you look at what's happened so far, home teams are 54.5% ATS. I don't think that's likely to continue. I'm going to have to go back and look and see if it's been the case that home teams have done well in the non-conference games or not. I do think, though, that in general still, you know, home field advantage, home court advantage, probably still overrated. So I think there could be some value on road teams coming up.
Now, I guess when we talk about the under doing well here early on in the season, I mean, is this, you know, the exception, not the norm? Is it usually overs early in the year because you've got, you know, the officiating mandates and you also have teams? You've talked about this before in our previous segments. Every head coach in the country, at least not everyone, but most of them say, we want to play faster this year. So right. Do you usually see the over coming through at this time of the year?
You know, neutral site games have been really good to unders early in the year. The games that are at regular home sites have done well to the over in past years. I will say that a lot has to do with what the rule changes are and whether they're calling more fouls or if, you know, there's been a big rule change that the odds makers don't know how to adjust to. I will say that I've noticed in quite a few of these games here so far this year, there have been less fouls called on average. So it's something to kind of keep in mind and look at as we go forward. You know, we'll see how many of the, obviously there's still going to be some ref shows. There's going to be games that there's tons of fouls, but you know, on the average, is there going to be a little bit less of the ticky tack fouls? If so, then, you know, you need to adjust as far as betting those totals. But I think that the biggest key is obviously the three-point range, three-point number being really bad. You know, there's been some teams really shooting poorly. And I'll just say that I had a game like Alabama, Florida Atlantic over on Monday. And that game, you know, moves up a bunch, tons of closing line value. And I don't remember exactly what Florida Atlantic finished shooting threes, but it was, you know, 5 for 30 or something like that, you know. You kind of wonder after a while, why wouldn't they start shooting some twos? But, you know, we've had a lot of games like that where three-point shooting numbers have been worse. I still think that that's not all because of the line moving back. I mean, you know, it's not such a big move back that nobody can make a shot from back there. So I would say I think that the rules have been good for the under. I also think the officiating has changed a little bit. Maybe they haven't had quite as many things that they wanted to enforce as past years. And then I would say that also, don't overreact to this, though, because it's not like you can just bet unders all in every single game the rest of the year and you're going to do great. But I mean, that's going to be a ton of volume to start with. And everybody's going to hear this. Everybody's going to talk about it. And eventually there's going to be some value the other way in some games. I will say something we've talked about quite a bit in the past. These neutral site unders do far better than the regular games. So we'll have a lot of neutral site games here coming up, and I think we're going to talk about a couple of them.
Here is something I do want to ask you about. There are two elements. You mentioned home court advantage and maybe it being a little bit overrated here still, especially early on in the year. I want to ask you first about long travel, and then I'm going to ask you second about altitude and the adjustments that you make with that. But, you know, we've seen, obviously, there are some strange games here in the non-conference. On Wednesday alone, Niagara goes from Buffalo, New York to Nacogdoches, Texas to play Stephen F. Austin. You've got Eastern Washington making a nice long hike out to St. Louis. Cal State Bakersfield taking on Northern Iowa. So you've got some teams that make some really, really long road trips. And look, we saw Winthrop beat St. Mary's in a back-to-back on Monday night. We saw San Jose State go to Hofstra up in the New York City area, win that game, then come back and lose to Portland. I believe that was at home or either in Portland, one of the two. It's not like these long travel spots are automatic play on or play against situations, but how do you factor that into the numbers you create from a home court advantage standpoint?
Well, there's no correct answer for exactly what the, you know, the change should be. I will say that I think the important distinction here is that, you know, if you're going someplace that you're not even close to used to going, you know, if this is someplace that is just totally foreign to you, then the adjustment has to be a little bit more. I would say that, you know, if you've got a team who is going a long ways away from home, they're not used to that, especially if they're a young team, I would bump up the home court advantage by a couple points. I think that moving it in an extreme way is just too much. I know some people would probably say, you know, well, just add, you know, 4 or 5 points of home court advantage. Like I said, I think home court advantage is a little bit overvalued. It hasn't shown itself so far this year, but I think it will in the long term. It has been in the past few years in general. But I think that, you know, one other thing that stands to point out to me is you talk about a team that makes a really long road trip, like San Jose State. They go on the road, beat Hofstra, and then they come home and lose to Portland. Portland's not a good team. Neither are San Jose State, obviously, but big upset there of Hofstra. Hofstra lost a lot of players from last year's team, so not quite as big of a stunner as some might think. But to me, it creates a bad spot in that next game because, you know, most people would think, well, they're back at home, everything's fine. They still had a long travel to go. When you come back home, everybody thinks everything's fine. I think your home court advantage in that next game when you come back home should be a little bit less than it normally would be.
No, that's an excellent point. I completely agree with that statement. And, you know, we'll see what happens to Winthrop, for example, just using them. They play at East Tennessee State, I think, Thursday night before they actually go back home and play their first game there in Rock Hill, South Carolina. So, you know, again, keep an eye out for those, too, because you have some teams that, you know, and we'll talk about one in a little bit in Washington, won't play a true road game until conference play. Some teams won't play more than maybe one or two home games here in the non-conference. So we'll try to hit on those as we go along here. But the other one I wanted to ask you about is teams that play in altitude that aren't used to it. You've got an Omaha team playing Colorado State on Wednesday night, but they play every year in Denver because the Pioneers in their conference. So it's not as big of a deal for Omaha to go and play in Fort Collins, Colorado, as it is, say, the Green Bay Phoenix to go and play in Albuquerque against New Mexico, or you got a situation where you've got a team making a long trip to Wyoming here in Cal State Fullerton to go play in Laramie. That's already going to be built into the line, though, when you get those really extreme altitude situations.
Yeah, that's usually going to be built into the line. And like you said, it you have to separate these from have they done something similar or have they not? You know, if a team's already been going to Colorado or Utah or Wyoming and they're just playing a different team, it doesn't really matter. I mean, they've been used to this, especially if they're veterans. You know, I would say the young teams going to play their first game in altitude, that's where I would look to bump the home court advantage up even a little bit more for the other team based on the fact that maybe they're totally new to this. Maybe they almost have nobody who's done this before, but most of these teams are going to be fairly used to it. Like you said, Nebraska, Omaha would be used to doing something like that. On the other hand, you know, Green Bay would not be accustomed to playing in altitude. That would be a spot I'd be concerned to play a team like Green Bay. They play extremely fast. We're playing in altitude, something they're not used to playing in. I would look to either go the other way or just stay away from that game.
Well, and it's funny, too. You look, for example, you know, Oregon State plays Wyoming here coming up this weekend. Oregon State, on one hand, used to playing in altitude, going to Boulder and Salt Lake City every year. On the other hand, Wyoming and Laramie is even higher in elevation than Salt Lake City and Boulder. So it's still a little bit different. Maybe that one's not as factored into the number because of what I just said. Oh, Oregon State's used to it. They do it every year. Yeah, but not to that degree. So these altitude situations, interesting. The weird travel spots, interesting. And again, if you think something is already built into the line, guess what? You've got live betting. You've got second half betting. You've got opportunities with adjusted numbers that aren't going to have that built-in inflation to the home court advantage. So a lot of different ways to go about it here early in the college basketball season.
Yeah, and remember, too, that you know if a team plays a game at altitude, the next game they might not play the best either, especially if they're playing a difficult opponent, playing a fast tempo or something like that. You know, that could affect the next game also. And I'm just kind of sitting here looking at Wyoming's schedule as we were talking. They're basically not leaving Wyoming, and they went to South Carolina. And now they're just going to be in Wyoming until January 1st. So that seems pretty interesting. I guess they have one neutral site game against Colorado at Las Vegas. But quite the interesting schedule there for the Wyoming Cowboys. So you're going to be talking about a lot of teams here, Detroit, Louisiana, teams who are not used to going and playing at altitude that are about to go to Wyoming.
Yeah, and of course then too, you know, you look at what Wyoming did against South Carolina, and it was not a good effort closer to sea level. So as they get some more games under their belt, they're playing everything at altitude. All of a sudden you go play at sea level against somebody or, you know, something close to it. Game like San Diego State on January 21st. You know, their road games are Denver, Boise, Colorado State, and Nevada before that. Three of those four at pretty decent elevation. San Diego State, not so much. So Look for Wyoming. Again, I mean, this is way far in advance, obviously, but these things do matter, and some of these travel and scheduling situations will add up as the season goes along.
Can I add one more thing about Wyoming? I think Wyoming's going to be a really bad team this year. I would look to go against Wyoming if I was going to bet on or against them. They're a team I'd rather fade. So I wanted to say that because I don't think that they're going to be a great look in some of these spots in these home games just because they lost a lot from last year. This is a team that is trying to slow down their tempo in a big way this year compared to a year ago. You know, a couple of years ago, this team was 8th fastest in the country in possession length, and now that they're going to be one of the 5 or 10 slowest teams in the country. So don't lay many points with Wyoming, and don't be afraid to go against them if you think the spot is right.
I don't understand why you wouldn't play at a fast pace and altitude. It's crazy to me. But, you know, again, and also, too, I mean, keep in mind that, you know, we talk about these elevation, these scheduling spots, but they may not be equalizers, which is exactly what you just said, because Wyoming's talent level way down. They're changing their style of play. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean you want to fade the team making the long trip or the long travel. It means they may be able to keep it a little bit closer. But again, if you've got a significant mismatch, still something that you want to factor into the equation. All right, a couple of games we want to touch on here specifically in college basketball. One of them here on Wednesday night. Interesting game in Milwaukee between Purdue and Marquette. We talked on Tuesday's show about LSU and VCU, also Villanova and Ohio State with Ralph Michaels. Here we talk about Purdue and Marquette, which, I mean, hey, this one's right up there with those other two games in terms of intrigue and, you know, the possibility for being very, very good.
Yeah, good game here. Purdue coming off that loss to Texas this past weekend. That was a good game there, 70-66. Pretty defensive-minded game, a slower pace. Purdue has played very slow so far this year. I've been a little bit surprised. You know, I'm keeping track of the tempo changes really closely, and Purdue has been one of the biggest tempo changes to move down so far this year. They slowed the game down as much as they could against Green Bay, which surprised me a bit, and then they played very slow against Texas as well. So that creates one of those tempo wars that we like to talk about here against Marquette. Marquette's going to want to play fast. 76 possessions in their first game against Loyola. You know, who wins the tempo war here? Marquette, my question mark for them is turnovers. You know, I don't know that they have good enough enough people around Howard at this point. You know, Howard's obviously a really good player. I mean, no doubting that. And he took 55% of their shots in their first game. You know, I mean, who else is going to step up for them at this point? You know, they had some people transfer away. Marquette, to me, doesn't have the depth that a team like Purdue has. Purdue, I think, will slow this game down. They're pretty good on offense, pretty good on defense as well. Obviously, if Howard shoots lights out, they can beat anybody. And, you know, they shot 61% from three-point range in their first game. You know, if they do something like that again, they're going to win this game. But I would say, my lean here would be to Purdue. I think that Marquette is a little bit down from last year. Obviously, Purdue doesn't have a Carson Edwards, and that's a huge hit. But I think that Purdue has the depth that Marquette lacks.
Well, and as we're recording here, of course, numbers popping over at BetOnline for Wednesday. We are recording this on Tuesday afternoon, because of some prior commitments that we both have. But, you know, hey, what is your number on this game?
We have Purdue -1 on this one.
Okay, so effectively, it's a little more than a coin flip because you've got, you know, obviously you have to factor in a little bit of home court advantage for Marquette. So, you know, at least with the game being played in Milwaukee. So, you know, you do think Purdue a better team on a neutral floor. And as you mentioned, I mean, the usage for Howard, something that you absolutely want to factor into the equation. One other college basketball game to touch on here as we fast forward all the way ahead to Saturday. Tennessee and Washington, and this isn't for us to kick around Rick Barnes, but this is an interesting game because Washington plays its opener against Baylor in Anchorage, Alaska, now plays Tennessee in Toronto, Ontario. Very unique spot here, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, I hope we'll have some chances to kick around Rick Barnes later in the year.
Oh, we will.
You know, I mean, I can't laugh too much right now. I don't want everybody to hear my hacking cough, but I will say, I always look forward to those times to talk about Rick Barnes, but
it's like we bond over them.
Right, I know. It's a, you know, I think listeners at this point really look for that kind of information. So we'll definitely get that to you later this year. But I agree with you. I think that this is a spot where it's really unique. Washington plays that zone that is so good. They extend out that zone. I'm very curious to see how they do rebounding the basketball this year. You know, you've got the farther out three-point line. Are they going to keep pushing it out farther and farther? What are they going to do? They're against this Tennessee team here who I think Tennessee, you know, they lost a decent amount from last year. They still have good guards. I think Tennessee is a good team. They really crashed the offensive boards. You know, Rick Barnes is all about them trying to get second chance opportunities. They don't necessarily get back and transition as quick as some teams. You know, if Washington gets the rebound, they're going to try to take off as fast as they can. Washington wants to play fast on offense, but then you've got, can Washington get the defensive rebound? You know, this is a really interesting game. I would lean toward the under here with this, a neutral site. I don't think the shooting percentages will be too great. My concern with the under would be, you know, how many offensive rebounds is Tennessee going to get? Because as you think about this, you say, you know, Tennessee crashing the boards the way they are, you would imagine that Tennessee would get quite a few offensive boards in this one. And obviously, how's Tennessee going to do against that zone?
Yeah, I think those are a couple of really big questions here, to say the least. One interesting thing, Isaiah Stewart, you know, maybe the top freshman for Washington here this year. He does have some guys that are pretty on par with him. But Isaiah Stewart from upstate New York, he actually went from Rochester to Washington, was getting looked at by Syracuse, winds up going with Mike Hopkins instead of Jim Boeheim. Almost a homecoming-esque type of game for him, because Washington will not play a true road game until they play Stanford the first week. I think it's actually the second week of January in Pac-12 play. So this is the closest he'll play to home. I'm sure he'll be well represented there by friends and family and everything. So obviously he'll be a guy, you know, fully mobilized to get up and go here. But that's the question, you know, and that is Washington's weakness. It was a weakness last year. They did pretty well against Baylor in that department. How do they do against Tennessee could very well define who wins that game.
Yeah, and I want to say one other thing as I'm looking here at the numbers. Tennessee was really good against zone last year. According to Synergy, they were 99th percentile, so really excellent against zone defenses. Obviously, they have a little bit of different personnel, but if you look at their numbers from last year, you would assume that Tennessee would do very well against the zone. This would be a game where I wouldn't be anxious to go against Tennessee. You know, like I said, I'd probably lean toward the under if I had to take something because of the neutral site, but I think I might have to lean toward Rick Barnes's team, which seems kind of strange here to me.
I like it. We're going to do that early on in the year here. The question I have, Tennessee does play, or Mount St. Mary's plays Washington beforehand. That's on Tuesday night. Tonight, Tennessee plays Murray State tonight. Without taking those games into consideration here, about where do you have this Tennessee and Washington number?
Yeah, I think maybe -1.5 or so. I don't have that number ready right now, but I think -1.5, -2 for Tennessee. I'm not sure what the market will come at here. I think it depends on how those two games before go. You know, Washington with a nice win on the neutral, maybe pick them as closer. Pick to Tennessee -1, -1.5. I would look to play Tennessee if it's around pick them. Like I said, I'm not anxious to back a Rick Barnes coach team. So I don't know that this one will make my schedule. I do think, though, that this is a really interesting game that's going to tell us a lot about both teams. You know, can Washington rebound with the new rules? Tennessee is going to be a really good test for that. And Tennessee, how similar are they to last year's team? Are they still excellent at beating the zone, or something different this year?
Yeah, we'll definitely find out a lot there in that one. And based on what the listeners wanted here, we are going to be separating the college basketball and the college football segments. So we go from our handicapping the hardwood segment to our college football first look, which, since we're doing this on Wednesday here, it's actually our college football second look. Maybe you can call it third look after talking about it with Brian Leonard in the first part of today's show. But look, man, it's week 12. It's that time of the year where there's a lot of pressure on a lot of teams. There's a lot of teams that are playing with no pressure, just playing to have fun. I think this can be a little bit of a dangerous time of the year, even though we know a lot about most of these teams.
Yeah, you know, this is the time of the year where I start wondering about teams who have a really poor record, you know, if they're going to keep giving effort, you know, something we've talked about before. I'd be careful with those underdogs now. I don't like laying big points in college football, but I know that in non-conference games late in the year, laying the points has been a good move. So I would say that, you know, this is something to look for in spots here going forward. Which teams are going to continue to play hard? We found some teams who are clearly still playing very hard for their coach. Actually, we talked about Tulsa last week, I believe. Tulsa comes out and wins that game. I was surprised. I haven't had a very good last week in my plays. I wasn't against Tulsa in that game, but was surprised they won it. Now, if you do look at it, and I don't know if you've said this one already or not in your other segments, but UCF should have won that game. That was a very misleading box score. So Tulsa, good win. You know, how much should we take out of that? I'm not sure. East Carolina, a team that continues to fight really hard. I think it's team dependent, coach dependent. Some of these guys clearly don't like their coaches. They know that that coach is likely not going to be there next year. You don't want to bet on those teams this time of the year.
No, and I'll tell you what, it's funny because after I got done watching whatever the shit show was at the end of the South Carolina game, I mean, I don't know how many people watched the end of that, but it was a debacle all the way around. It was bad from both sides. It was a complete mess. I don't know how you lose Brian Edwards on fourth down there if you're App State. I don't know how you miss him if you're Ryan Helinski. The holding call was there anyway. It was a total disaster. But I said to somebody, I was like, look, when you're South Carolina, either fire Muschamp and hire Eli Drinkwitz right now or go and get Mike Houston from East Carolina, because that dude is not going to be there long. I mean, I know that they're not playing well on defense. They don't have enough talent on defense. That offense is humming right along, though. And Mike Houston's going to find a Power 5 job real quick.
Definitely, definitely. I think that, you know, South Carolina in that game, honestly, you know, South Carolina looked really poor throughout that game overall. And I did see the end of that game. Oh. You're kind of sitting there at the end of the game thinking, I'm not sure who deserves to win this game. I mean, this is a, you know, App State outplayed South Carolina for a decent amount of the game, but had some major breakdowns late in the game, and it still ended up working for him. But yeah, I agree with you. South Carolina is a bit of a tough team to figure out. And honestly, I wouldn't really want to back South Carolina here the rest of the year.
No, definitely not. Because, I mean, now they're not making it to a bowl game. They could beat Texas A&M on the road this week. It could happen. They sure as hell are not beating Clemson in that final game. So South Carolina's not going bowling. And, you know, they had that very difficult schedule coming into the season. And not to spend too much time on the Gamecocks, but there are a lot of teams at sort of this, you know, fork in the road where do they want to go to some garbage bowl game, you know, in some city they don't really want to go to, or do they just want to be done? Do they want 15 practices in a bowl game, or do they just want to call things quits for the season? You know, you start the year with, you know, certain level of expectations. If you're not going to meet them, what does it matter to you? Does it mean anything to you? There are teams that fall into that boat. We'll be able to talk about them over the next couple of weeks here. You know, cause that's where, you know, we really see that element kind of come into play, but that's the thing. You know, I was kind of looking at my power ratings this week and going, I mean, they're there and I can grab numbers and there are some overlays that I have, but I don't know if all these teams are going to show up. I don't know if they're going to want to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's difficult this time of the year to play at as large of a volume, especially from a side standpoint, because it's hard to know what to think. You know, you get to this time of the year, there are quite a few games you just kind of want to be like, yeah, I don't want to bet that game. I mean, why would you want to bet that game? You know, I guess some listeners might be surprised we're not going to talk about UMass and Northwestern, but that would be one of those games that I'd right away say, gosh, I mean, what? I don't even know. If somebody said to you, you know, you get $1 million if you pick the right side here, I don't know what I would do. I mean, do you have any lean in that one? Put you on the spot.
I mean, it has to be Northwestern just because UMass is that bad. But at the same time for Northwestern, I mean, are they really motivated to let out some frustration against UMass? I mean, they're 1-8. They've scored, what, 38 points in their last six games or whatever it is? Like, I mean, they've scored 100 points for the season, and they're a 40-point favorite this week.
Yeah, I mean, it just says what UMass is. I probably would take Northwestern if I was absolutely forced to take a side. I'd be scared, and I would not want to watch that game. I mean, you know, I have watched Northwestern's offense enough this year that it makes you wonder, are they bad enough that UMass will be able to stop it? Probably not. You know, I mean, it's a Big Ten team against UMass, but I didn't mean to hijack the segment there.
No,
but.
It's fine. If somebody wants to give me $1 million to pick the right side, at least I got a simple hedge. I'm going to get something out of it.
Yeah. Right. That's what you'd be doing. Definitely.
The only way I could bet on UMass is with free money. That's it. That's the only way. And it would have to be free money from somebody I don't like.
Right. You'd feel guilty otherwise, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And again, I mean, that's the thing here at this time of the year. You question how motivated teams are to run up scores, how motivated they are to show up. Obviously, if you're in the college football playoff discussion, that's one thing. Like a Clemson who, not that we're going to talk about this game, and I will talk about it as we go throughout the week here, but I mean, Clemson's laying over 30 against a team that was fraudulently in the top 25 up until, what, a week or two ago? I mean, that's crazy to me, but that's the time of the year that we're in. So you got to make a lot of difficult decisions here at this time of the year, or you have to make some leaps of faith, just assuming that you've kind of got the right idea about some of these teams. And let's see if we got the right idea here in this game. Game 357, 358, Navy and Notre Dame. This one's down from 10 to 9. I believe it was as low as 8.5 before coming back up a little bit. Fighting Irish defending the triple option here. What do you think?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about this game for a couple of reasons. First, you know, I try to take opportunities here on the show to point out where I've been wrong. You know, everybody likes to talk about in this industry, you know, beat their chest and talk about how good they are. You know, that's not the way I am to start with. And, you know, I like to be totally honest and transparent about it. Let me tell you, probably my worst bet of the year was Duke last weekend against Notre Dame. I mean, just a terrible performance from Duke in that game. I still am a little bit surprised. You know, you thought as big of a game as that was for Duke that they would show up. I'm surprised Notre Dame was so into that game. I didn't think they'd be so motivated. I will say, you know, it's one of the things I don't really love doing too often, going against the same team 2 weeks in a row when I just lost against them the last week. But I would like Navy in this one if we can get 10 again. I think 10 will probably come back here. It looks like this line is heading back up based on where the money is going. So, you know, we'll see if we can get a 10. But it seems to me like Navy is a team that can run the ball on just about anybody. And Notre Dame's run defense has been pretty questionable this year. You know, I mean, if you watch the Michigan game, you saw Michigan just gashing them one after another. And they knew Michigan was going to run, but they just ran it down their throat every time. I think Navy can move the ball here. They're going to play keep away with that possession, obviously. I don't think Notre Dame's a team that I want to lay a lot of points against a quality team. I think Navy is a good enough team that if you're getting 10, I do think 10 will come back here. Pinnacle right now here, Tuesday afternoon, -9.5 at -115. Usually a pretty good leading indicator. I think we'll see 10 again. How long will it be there? I'm not sure. I tend to like Navy in this game. This is not a big power ratings overlay. It's more of a spot where, you know, Navy has given Notre Dame some difficulty in the past. Notre Dame doesn't have as much to play for as what they would have wanted to play for. You know, I would have to lean plus the points here with Navy.
I think that makes sense. And a huge loss. When you talk about defending the option, a huge loss with Julian Okwara going out for Notre Dame. I mean, he's a first-round pick type of guy. Probably, I mean, obviously it's not great that he has a broken bone in his leg, but, you know, it could have been an ACL or something trying to defend this option attack and all the cut blocks and all that type of thing. The thing that you kind of touched on, I think you sort of beat around the bush with a little bit, but I knew what you were talking about here, is that you've got Navy playing ball control. They've done it to pretty much everybody they've played this year. I don't think Notre Dame's offense is all that efficient. And again, to lay margin against an option team, you've got to maximize your limited number of possessions. And I don't know if Notre Dame can do that here against Navy. They're not going to get a lot of them. Maybe, what, six or seven possessions, something like that, possibly eight at the most, you know, if they're able to get stops and get off the field. To cover double digits in that type of setting, it's Navy or nothing for me, too. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, maybe seven possessions or something like that. And then this is one of those games where, you know, if Navy jumps out to a 7-0 lead or something like that, and you got +10, That 7-0 lead is feels a lot bigger than that with a team like Navy, because Navy is going to do the best they can to keep the ball away from Notre Dame. And like you said, you know, I don't think that Notre Dame's that efficient on offense. Still don't really trust Ian Book either. You know, I know he's had some good games, but not a great quarterback. I think that Notre Dame's a good team, not a great team. I think Navy will be up for this game. You know, look at how much time Navy has to get ready for this game. So you would think Navy would be well prepared.
And it certainly should be. There's no excuse for them not to be prepared, and the service academies are almost always prepared. So, hey, if Notre Dame's not prepared, and I mean, that's certainly a possibility against this option attack. You know, looks like a spot where, you know, Navy probably pretty live, not just to cover the number, but I'm not going to be stunned if they win outright. I really, really wouldn't be. And again, I mean, that's the thing here at this time of the year, too. You may get some favorites, and if they don't show up and they're playing quality competition, you're maybe not just talking about covering the spread. You may be talking about the outright, too. So it's a good time of year to sprinkle money lines, I think, as well.
Yeah, I do, too. I think that this would be the type of game that if you like the underdog, obviously you probably want to put the majority of your bet on the ATS, but take a chance with the money line as well.
Yeah, a little 85-15, something like that. You know, I think that's not a bad idea at all. One more game to tackle here, pardon the pun, as we talk some Week 12 college football. Game 387-388, high noon kickoff in Ann Arbor. Michigan State and Michigan. Wolverines a 13.5-point favorite here in this one. There were some 14s and some 14.5s early on in the week. Most of those at this point are gone.
Yeah, I have to tell you, this is one where this one surprised me quite a bit. You know, you and I were actually kind of texting back and forth the other day. I didn't get to pay as much attention to football this past Saturday as I wanted to, based on, you know, just some family health issues going on and trying to help take care of the kids and, you know, myself not doing too great either. But I will tell you that I was kind of following earlier in the game when Michigan State was winning, what was it, 28-3 or something against Illinois? And then they end up losing that game, and I didn't see how they lost. I just went back afterwards and saw that they did lose. I was pretty stunned. I mean, you know, this is a Illinois team that really has negative regression all over its profile. Michigan State, a great chance to finally bounce back. You could say, well, what were they looking ahead? Why would they look ahead to this game? They hadn't been able to win. You know, I think that Michigan State is the team I have a ton of questions about right now. Seems like D'Antonio has kind of lost that program a little bit to me. And I know that's a strong statement. D'Antonio is a good coach, but something's wrong with Michigan State right now. There's no way I could take Michigan State plus the points. I know that, you know, it feels like they should pull one of these upsets one of these times. And, you know, as an Ohio State fan, I kind of hate to say it, but, you know, in a game like this, I have to like Michigan. I mean, obviously I don't like Michigan, but from a betting standpoint, yeah, I think Michigan has a good chance to run up the score again, kind of like they did against Notre Dame. I mean, Michigan State's defense, pretty good, not as good as we thought they'd be. Michigan State's offense, look, we know how bad Michigan State's offense is. So I'm kind of curious to get your thoughts on this one, but there's no way I could bet Michigan State.
Yeah, and I was actually reading a little bit this afternoon. Brian Lewerke, you know, so the concussion spotters kind of saw something in that game, and, you know, they were sort of evaluating him, and he said, you know, oh, I felt fine, and so it seems like there's even a little bit of a disconnect, you know, within the program with some of the game day operations and stuff that's going on. And obviously the spotters are going to err on the side of caution every time, as they should. But, you know, just there does seem to be this massive disconnect here with Michigan State. And the funny thing is, they'll probably lose this game. Their last chance of getting a signature win for this year. We assumed it was a difficult schedule anyway, going to Columbus, to Madison, and to Ann Arbor. They're going to make a bowl game at 6-6 because they're not losing at Rutgers. I don't, no matter how bad they play. And I don't see them losing to Maryland on November 30th either. They're going to be a 6-6 bowl team with 5 losses in a row in conference play. And I'm going to have exactly zero idea what to do with them in whatever bowl game they're in. Because,
yeah,
I mean, the offense is terrible, but D'Antonio's a good head coach unless he has lost the program, which could be a thing. But what a strange year for Michigan State, especially some of the games early on in the year that, you know, I mean, they should have beaten Arizona State. They didn't. You know, they got that win over Indiana. Indiana's ranked for the first time in 25 years. And that's one of Michigan State's wins. It's a strange year in East Lansing, to say the least.
Well, I mean, don't you think it's time for Michigan State to try a different kind of offense? You know, everybody else is kind of adjusting and saying, you know, we have to pass it a little bit more. We have to use the spread more often. Michigan State has just stayed very predictable on offense. I know that they're in the shotgun a decent amount of the time. They're a very predictable offense, and I think that's proven itself in the numbers. And I know some people say, you know, just take Brian Lewerke out. You know, he's no good. And Lewerke has not been good. I'm not trying to defend Lewerke, but the guys behind him aren't any good either. So, I mean, it's not like they have somebody else good to just put out there. Michigan State has some serious offensive problems. You know, this is a team that I would not want to back. I don't even think I'd want to bet them in a bowl game. I mean, maybe he's going to prove me wrong and they'll pull one of these big upsets. He's done it before. It's just that, you know, I don't think we can count on it with this team.
Well, and this is a discussion for another day, but I was having a conversation with a buddy of mine over the weekend, and we were talking about Michigan State. We were talking about the collapse. We were talking about Iowa. We were talking about Northwestern. Some of these dinosaurs in the Big Ten here, some of these dinosaur head coaches, it just feels like the game has passed them by. And Iowa's not having a bad year. I mean, they are 6-3. They're not having a bad year, but you know, they're a fumbled muff punt away from probably losing to Iowa State. They only had 3 points against Michigan. Probably should have beaten Penn State. You could make that case. Wisconsin last week, that game was right there for the taking. But, you know, some of these guys entrenched at their jobs in the Big Ten, the game has passed them by. They can't compete with Ohio State. They can't compete really with Penn State. Now Minnesota's passed them by. Wisconsin's lucky that the old style of football still works for them, because their recruiting pipeline is still fairly rich. But the Big Ten is really becoming the haves and have-nots. And I think the gap only grows as we go forward here, unless some changes are made with teams like Michigan State and especially Northwestern.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that there are some teams who have been a lot more innovative than others, and we're seeing the split is getting more drastic, like you said. I think that we're going to see more in the next 2 or 3 years where some of those guys are going to have to realize, okay, either, you know, I have to change the way that I coach, or I have to have a coach that helps me offensively, or, you know, it doesn't really fit well anymore. You know, you can't just do that. Sure, you can do that some of the time, but that can't be your only plan of attack.
Well, I know we said we were going to keep it a little bit short, but when you and I get on a roll, it just kind of happens organically here. So good segment. Good to get you on the show here a couple days later. But you know what? Better late than never here with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. What's going on over at the website right now, brother?
Yeah, I've got some early bird specials up for college basketball, also NBA. I extended those out for another week. So through the 18th of November, I'll have those special prices up. You can check that out at huntersportspicks.com. If you haven't already signed up for the free picks newsletter, I would suggest you do that. Only got to send out one this past weekend. I've been on a real nice run on those free pick newsletters. You can sign up there. You also get a free premium pick if you sign up there and register. So a good opportunity there to sign up there for free at huntersportspicks.com.
Kyle Hunter, huntersportspicks.com. Definitely one of the best, one of my best friends. And of course, you know, one of the best segments here in the business when you're on the show. So Kyle, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, man. Talk to you then.
There you go. There's Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with Brad Powers from bradpowerssports.com. And then I'll fill in the gaps with the college football games that we missed on our previous segments here throughout the week. Obviously, we'll hit a ton of them with Brad, hit a few of them here on today's show with Brian Leonard and Kyle Hunter, a few on Tuesday's show with Ralph Michaels. So still getting you a lot of college football, a lot of college basketball as well, tons of stuff going on. Keep it tuned right here to Bang the Book Radio, because we'll cover as much of it as we possibly can for you each and every week. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.